Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and thank you for joining me on this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, Pope Benedict sends material and spiritual support to the people of southern Peru, struggling to recover from last week's devastating earthquake. And as diplomatic efforts continue to find a solution for the divided province of Kosovo, we find out about grassroots efforts to heal the wounds of the past. Welcome to the program. The Vatican announced on Monday that Pope Benedict has sent $200,000 of aid money to help victims of last week's devastating earthquake in southern Peru. Over 500 people are known to have died in towns and villages around the port city of Pisco, while many more are still missing or injured, and tens of thousands have been made homeless by this disaster. The money will be sent through the Holy See's charitable organisation Cor Unum, while Vatican Secretary of State Cardinal Tarcisio Bertone will travel to Peru next week to bring a personal message of support from the Pope to all those suffering the effects of this tragedy. The announcement came one day after Pope Benedict himself prayed for the victims of the earthquake while greeting pilgrims and visitors during the recitation of the Sunday Angelus at his summer residence in Castel Gandolfo, south of Rome, where he's been staying for the past 3 weeks. My colleague Emma McCarthy takes a closer look at what the Pope had to say.
Pope Benedict XVI announced that he is sending a special envoy to Peru, Vatican Secretary of State Cardinal Tarcisio Bertone.
In questi giorni, il nostro pensiero e la nostra preghiera sono costantemente rivolti alla popolazione di Peru.
In comments following the Sunday Angelus, the Holy Father said that the prayers of the entire church were with the population of Peru, hit by a devastating magnitude 8 earthquake earlier this week.
Per I numerosi defunti,
from the courtyard of the papal summer residence in Castel Gandolfo, the Pope invoked the peace of our Lord on the numerous victims and countless injured, and then told the thousands left homeless and in miserable conditions by the disaster that the church is with them, both spiritually and materially.
La Chiesa è con voi.
My Secretary of State, he said, who has long expressed his desire to visit Peru, will leave for South America within the next few days to be a witness of my solidarity and the concrete aid of the Holy See. On Sunday, Cardinal Bertone was in the Italian summer resort of Rimini on the peninsula's Adriatic coast to celebrate Mass opening the 28th edition of the Rimini meeting for friendship among peoples. Speaking after the Angelus, Pope Benedict sent his greetings to participants in the week-long event, this year centred on the theme of truth as our common destiny.
Stamani si è aperto a Rimini il meeting per l'amicizia tra I popoli.
The Holy Father said he would pray that the meeting be an occasion for reflection and the healthy exchange of ideas and opinion so that mankind's primary vocation be realised, the search for truth, and therefore the search for God.
Impegnarsi senza compromessi per la verità.
Truth was also the central theme of Pope Benedict XVI's reflections on this Sunday's liturgy. The Holy Father said that those who intend to follow Christ and to commit themselves without compromise to his truth need to realize that they will meet with opposition and will become, despite their best efforts, a sign of division between people, even at times within their own families. Christ, he said, came among us to bring peace, but his peace is not synonymous with an absence of conflict. On the contrary, Christ's peace is the result of a constant battle against evil. Thus, Christians are called to be instruments of God's love and peace, not an inconsistent and apparent peace, but a peace that is real and that is pursued with courage and determination each and every day, so that good prevails over evil.
Sit nomen Domini benedictum.
Finally, Pope Benedict invoked the blessings of the Virgin Mary upon the pilgrims present beneath his window and on all those watching and listening across the world.
Upon all of you, I invoke Christ's blessings of joy and peace.
And my thanks to Emma McCarthy for that report on Pope Benedict's Angelus address. As you heard there, Cardinal Bertone, the Vatican Secretary of State, will be travelling to Peru next week. It's a trip he had planned some time ago to mark the opening of the National Eucharistic Congress, which takes place in the city of Chimbote from the 25th to the 30th of August. But speaking to Vatican Radio on Sunday, the Cardinal said he will be modifying his travel plans to convey a personal message of solidarity and support from Pope Benedict to earthquake survivors and to all those affected by this natural disaster.
La vicinanza spirituale, la solidarietà, anche la carità del Papa e della Chiesa per queste popolazioni colpite e portare anche il senso di amicizia anche tra due popoli, il popolo italiano e il popolo peruviano.
Cardinal Bertone said it's essential that international organizations and the local churches continue to mobilize all their efforts to bring emergency aid as well as long-term reconstruction and support to those devastated communities.
Dei segnali di solidarietà e di sostegno.
In Peru, meanwhile, rescuers have given up hope of finding any more survivors from Wednesday's earthquake, while the country's president has pledged to rebuild the devastated areas. Food, blankets, medicines and other essential supplies continue to be flown in to help survivors, especially in the more remote mountain areas away from the coast. Alfonso Rivero is Peru's ambassador to the Holy See, and he says those affected by this earthquake will find great comfort in the Pope's words and gestures of solidarity with the victims.
For us Peruvians, the message yesterday by the Holy Father had bring to us comfort in these hours of the problems, because of the magnitude of the tragedy that afflicted my country. We hope that the cooperation of around the world will bring to Peru help we need in these circumstances, and we hope that many countries will come to Peru in aid to our brothers who unfortunately lost everything they have.
Alfonso Rivero there, Peru's ambassador to the Holy See. Catholic organizations and lay volunteers are in the front line in responding to the needs of Peru's earthquake victims. Walter Blake is Deputy Director for Solidarity and Justice with the Latin American Office of Catholic Relief Services, or CRS. He told Ema McCarthy more about the physical and spiritual support the organization is trying to provide right now.
As you know, we're part of the Caritas family. And so we have a team presently in the field, in the place where the earthquake struck in Ica, Pisco, Chincha. And they've been doing an assessment together with the local church, with the bishop and his priests in this affected diocese. There's two dioceses that have been most affected, the Diocese of Ica and the Diocese of Cañete, which is in a part at the end of the department of Lima. And in this immediate stage, it's as you can imagine, as happens in most emergencies, it's basically getting basic supplies to the people. And so that means water, food, basic hygiene materials, and blankets, because Peru is a desert in general, and this is these areas are in valleys that cross the desert, of course, but at night, even though it's tremendously warm during the day, it's cold at night, and because of the number of people that are still, of course, without even temporary shelter. And what we're doing at the national level, we're coordinating every day with the national Caritas to try to figure out, you know, what is the best approach and how to organize ourselves to respond.
Now, the bishops right across South America have issued an ordinance this week that all funds collected in parishes and dioceses across Latin America will be channeled into support for Peru, for the Peruvian people. But only today we've seen that the president, Alan Garcia, has said that he will deploy soldiers to try and bring about an orderly distribution of aid. There seems to be some sort of problem in the distribution of aid on the ground. Do you have any information regarding why there is this problem?
Okay, it's something, you know, that's understandable in the sense that altogether there's 200,000 people that have been affected. 100,000, you know, have lost their homes completely, but another 100,000 have lost part of their homes or part of their homes have been destroyed. And the traffic to the zone, the major highway, the Pan-American Highway that gets to the zone, was closed. And so resources that would go generally to markets and to other places, of course, weren't getting to the zone. It's, you know, understandable in the first days after a major earthquake or disaster such as this, that there's certain problems in distribution. What the government has been doing is airlifting things to Pisco. There's an Air Force base there, and that was the zone most affected. You know, fortunately, the airstrip wasn't affected. So there are problems, but, you know, the government is trying to work through that, and I was in a meeting yesterday with the director of Caritas Peru and Bishop Miguel Irizar, the president of Caritas Peru, and that idea of really how to ensure coordination with the government so that the relief efforts aren't duplicated and at the same time that the distribution continues to improve.
Church organizations, the work of lay Catholics really are at the forefront of emergency relief services. CRS mm-hmm. is a worldwide organization, very much present in South America. Any of our listeners wanting to help or contribute to the relief efforts of CRS, how do they go about doing this?
Just go to the CRS webpage, crs.org, and it'll explain where to mail donations to. You know, the church is present in the two dioceses that have been especially hit. There's two more dioceses, one Cabalica and Cardavalí, that have been marginally affected. But, in the case of Ica, the diocese most affected, the bishop and you know, the priests are present, are doing, you know, being with the people, taking care of both, you know, spiritual needs in the sense of a moment of great pain and sorrow, that the church, that's one of our fundamental ways of responding. But at the same time, realizing that the people also are hungry, the people are without food, shelter, and that there is this also mandate to act and respond as quickly as possible.
Walter Blake there from the Latin American Office of Catholic Relief Services. Turning closer to home now, in the embattled Balkan region, finding an agreement on the future status of the breakaway province of Kosovo is proving an elusive goal. The deadlock between the territory's Albanian majority and Serbia is so complete that many now believe no agreement is ever going to be reached by the two sides. Kosovo is still legally part of Serbia, but has been under a UN administration installed after a NATO bombing campaign ended a violent Serb crackdown against ethnic Albanians seeking independence. An international envoy said recently that the partition of Kosovo could be acceptable as a way of breaking the deadlock over the province's future. An earlier plan drawn up by the UN Special Envoy for Kosovo, Martti Ahtisaari, proposed giving the territory a form of internationally supervised independence, but that was given the thumbs down by Serbia. As the long-running diplomatic efforts to resolve Kosovo's future continues, Susie Hodges has been finding out how the rival communities in the territory view each other, and in particular about a program that is helping the younger generation to look beyond the ethnic hatreds of the past.
Kosovo has been the backdrop to a centuries-old and often tense relationship between its Serb and ethnic Albanian inhabitants. Albanian Kosovars currently make up more than 90% of the population, while the Serb minority live in isolated enclaves under NATO protection. Deep-seated ethnic hatreds and mistrust were stirred up by the brutal conflict of the 1990s in Kosovo, And Catholic Relief Services is an NGO that has taken on the daunting task of trying to promote reconciliation and trust between these two hostile communities. Florent Vranica is the head of office for Catholic Relief Services, or CRS, in Kosovo. He's an ethnic Albanian and is based in the capital, Pristina. He says the partition of Kosovo as a way out of the current deadlock over the territory's future is opposed not just by his ethnic grouping, but also by the Serb minority.
Partition is ruled out from both sides, from Albanian side in Kosovo and from Serb side. Partition would mean that north of Kosovo, the port north of River Ibar, to be separated from the other port. And it is understandable that most of the important historical and heritage sites of the Serb population or Serb community, like Dečani Monastery, Gračanica Monastery, would remain then in the other part of Kosovo. So it's understandable that that is not the option for Kosovo Serbs as well. However, we all know that many voices are saying that if Kosovo will declare self-independence, the Albanian side, then the local Serb, particularly the ones who live in the north of river, will declare independence within that act. So I think at this point, no party has expressed any willingness on division or partition.
Vranica says there's still a lot of pent-up anger among the population of Kosovo, and he fears that going for the partition option could provoke violence.
According to what we hear from the news and from different analysts and from the declaration of politicians, the division could spark conflict, maybe isolated conflict in a northern port. But if Kosovo declares independence unilaterally, definitely the Serbs in Kosovo will come up with some kind of declaration, will declare independence of the northern port, and that will not bring clear decision or any clarity on what's going on.
You mentioned there the threat of violence. Do many people think there is this potential for violence, as you say, if no agreement is reached and both sides go ahead with perhaps independence declarations?
Yeah, I mean, Kosovo is high rates of unemployment in Kosovo in general. The poverty line, which is around 27%, 30% on a $2 per day, and the lack of investments. At this point, everybody links this with this final status resolution, you know, with independence, with no investments. So the prolongation of kind of resolution of this of the status could initiate violence toward politicians, to the government. You know, there is a lot of anger accumulated within the population. That's one thing. The second is that there have been a lot of promises, and not only from the leaders in Kosovo, but also from the international community. With Ahtisaari's plan, with Kosovar's feeling is that there have been a lot of compromises. So yes, I mean, there is a lot of anger inside, and we hear declarations of some groups which are more radical that prolongation can cause violence, and also the partition can cause violence.
Petr Prica is the head of youth programs for CRS and is a Serbian Kosovar based in the city of Mitrovica. Unlike his colleague Vranica, he believes that the risk of violence, although still present, has lessened of late.
I think the potential for violence was bigger, let's say, in the beginning of the Ahtisaari's leading the process, because some countries were giving the statements such as, if we don't reach the agreement, then violence is possible, very possible, because people are losing their patience. At this point, I think that there is less chance for violence comparing to the previous period.
Why is that?
Because from the statements that I'm hearing from both sides, it doesn't seem that either side is ready to use the violence as a main tool for achieving their goal. It's my personal impression, so hopefully it will remain as it is.
They may belong to rival ethnic groups within Kosovo, but both Vranica and Prica are colleagues of the same NGO and say they both enjoy an excellent working relationship with each other. But when it comes to their private lives, both men say that it's extremely rare for any Albanian and Serbian Kosovar to socialise outside working hours. Franica spells out the reality of the separate lives that both ethnic groups lead within the territory.
Life is separated. In the past 15, 16 years, there was a great division between Kosovo Albanians and Kosovo Serbs. In schools, in universities, even in the bars and cafeterias or wherever people would socialize. So there was a lack of contact. And so my contacts with Serb community are exclusively through my work. And that's the time when I can socialize with them. Otherwise, in private, it's very hard. Not really hard, but there is no chance to have such a communication.
Would you be criticized if you tried to?
No, this is common in Kosovo-wide. There were some researches and some interviews with different people from both sides. People would have a great relations in terms of business or in terms of officially, but when it comes to the private, then people would be much hesitant to socialize because people have different views on the final status. So people don't want to spoil those relations, but want to maintain those relations at the level when the politics will not be mentioned at all.
Prica too echoes Vranica by saying politics is a strictly taboo subject when Albanian and Serbian Kosovars do happen to meet in a business or social setting. So, given these restraints, does he have any Albanian friends in Kosovo?
Yes, I do. I had prior to the war, but it's very difficult for socializing between two ethnicities at this point of time. Sometimes we manage to see each other. That's because I have an opportunity to come into the confidence zone because I'm working with the international NGO. Otherwise, I don't believe we would be able.
But you can still stay friends as long as you stay off the subject of politics, then?
Of course. We usually don't discuss that. We discuss our normal lives, our normal things, normal happenings, and we don't talk about politics at all.
Given the separate lives of ethnic Albanians and Serbs within Kosovo, it's not surprising that mixed marriages between the two communities are virtually unheard of. Vranica again.
I didn't have a chance to hear that is happening lately. That even didn't happen a lot in the past as well. Mixed marriages in Kosovo were very few, but there are cases. I have a friend who is dating a Serb girl, so there are cases.
Although 8 years have gone by since the end of the war in Kosovo, Vranica says the reconciliation between the two ethnic communities is still only skin deep. And if one scratches beneath the surface, it's easy to uncover long-standing resentments and mistrust.
There was kind of reconciliation between the communities, but it is on surface. The root causes of the entire process have not been addressed. On this clarity, what will be the future? People can live together, but at some point when all this negotiation, all this process come up, it can bring violence again. It can be renewed violence in those communities where there was reconciliation or at least that where there was a kind of peace and people start to live together.
When it comes to living together, the divided city of Mitrovica is a potent symbol of the lingering enmity between the Albanian and Serb Kosovars. The river flowing through Mitrovica marks the boundary between two hostile halves, the northern Serb district and the southern Albanian district. And the city remains a major flashpoint for clashes between the rival ethnic groups. The tensions are so strong that residents of one side only rarely dare to cross over the bridge into the other side outside working hours. CRS believes the best hope for rebuilding trust and dialogue between these two hostile communities lies in the younger generation. As a result, CRS has helped establish a dialogue between the teenagers of the two rival communities in Mitrovica. They have set up the citywide youth council to improve facilities and conditions inside their respective schools. The young people from the two communities that belong to this council keep in frequent touch by cell phone, text messaging and chatting on internet forums. As Pritzer explains, the aim is to show that multi-ethnic peace building is possible and that gradually, through projects like this, people's attitudes can be changed.
Throughout these years we tried and we are trying to connect the people, to make them think differently and to make them feel free to went out of their stereotypes about the other side.
And when you talk to these young people, are they initially perhaps quite reluctant or quite prejudiced even to open contacts with members of the other ethnic group?
That's the case. That's the case. In majority of the cases, people are reluctant to contact or to discuss the other side. But as soon as they find out that the person on the other side, that they share a lot of problems, they have common issues, then things are slowly moving further.
Overcoming the enmities of the past is a slow and often painful process. And Pritzer says the young ethnic Albanians and Serbs are discovering that they are still having to contend with the prejudices of others in their respective communities.
There are a lot of virtual friendships, but they are not showing it publicly because of possible security threats, because there are possibility for that on both sides.
So you're saying that if somebody has a friend with somebody from the rival ethnic group, it's not safe to talk about it because other people could object, could maybe even threaten them?
So there is a lot of displaced people in Mitrovica on both sides. There is a lot of people that lost their family members on both sides. So it would not be wise to talk publicly about it because you never know how people can react.
So you're saying there's a lot of bitterness, particularly perhaps amongst the people who were older and can remember the war much more, say, than a young person.
Exactly.
As the following example by Pritzer proves, more and more of the young people involved in their programme are learning to put aside past hatreds and embrace the path of reconciliation.
I can give you an example of the Albanian girl. Her father was missing since the 1999 war, and she was trying to be very polite and careful with her Serbian colleagues. In one occasion, one donor representative asked her some very tricky questions, like how you manage to work together with the Serbs. And she said openly, the war is behind us. I lost my father. We still don't know where he is. But I can see that these young people are exactly the same as I am. So we don't want to fight anymore.
It's CRS's hope that sentiments like that will become more widespread among Kosovo's young people and thus increase the chances of a peaceful future.
Susie Hodges was talking there to Petar Pritsa, head of youth programs for Catholic Relief Services in Mitrovica, and to Florent Vranica, head of Catholic Relief Services in Pristina. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English programme for today. Join us again at this same time tomorrow or find us on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org/English. For now, stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.